he thinks himself the king.
Well, that's chapter 5. Right? Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. For a foolish person cannot understand that the Supersoul is sitting as a friend within and conducting his actions. Although the material causes are the place, the worker, the endeavor, and the senses, the final cause is the Supreme, the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one should see not only the four material causes, but the Supreme Efficient Cause as well. One who does not see the Supreme thinks himself to be the doer. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, he does not kill. Nor is he bound by his actions. Reported in this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Can't find it?
Which ball?
So there's a black Bhagavatam in the black Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's all the way, it's not in the one of the bookshelf. Oh, they must have moved everything and merged it.
It's not there anymore.
Did you ask today?
Yeah, he was there. Not right, she said the wagon up the track. Bought it on the
So as Jagannath Prasad, he's down in the kitchen. Fifth canto.
Fifth canto, part.
I think it's part one.
Chapter one.
In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself as the worker and the Supreme Lord as the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness or lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Supersoul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing does not kill, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged by a court of law. What's the question? Not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled. I think it's easy to describe the very nice descriptions that the scriptures present of the soul when the soul has a natural brilliance or effulgence. And that's the position of spiritual consciousness, of God consciousness. However, when that consciousness becomes polluted or contaminated by identification with matter, then that natural brilliance, effulgence, dazzling feature becomes covered. One's intelligence correspondingly also then becomes influenced and contaminated and polluted and conditioned, and by the standard that is being presented in this verse, uninfluenced, unintelligent. One becomes forgetful of the fifth factor of action, and instead can perceive only, in varying degrees, the other four factors. Place, person who is performing the activity, the endeavor that they're applying, and the instruments that they're using, including their senses, or the extension of their senses. And they can't perceive the other factor. That's another kind of intelligence than material intelligence. Material intelligence is a whole other thing. We're saying here, no, one is not very intelligent. That means spiritual intelligence. And by absolute standards, spiritual anything is that which is real and definite. In other words, that which is permanent, where there is no cessation. That's truth. Therefore, in an absolute sense, there's no intelligence if one cannot see the fact that everything is being sanctioned and there's a sanctioner. With logic, that can be understood. At least one can come to the logical conclusion that so many people are making the endeavor to make money in this present age. Some people are very successful and some people are less successful. Or you can measure out by some kind of statistics, so many people with certain IQ, etc. Some person becomes very successful, another person just can't do anything. The simple expression that Prabhupada presents is some man is born a pauper, another man is born with a silver spoon. And why is that? Because of difference of karma. So similarly, because of difference of consciousness, one consciousness allows one to perceive just how it is that God is sanctioning and another doesn't. And there's a sentimental expression of that also. The sentimental expression gets lost when everything comes down to the pinch. Like Prabhupada's description of the chanting as performed by a parrot. Parrot can also mimic the sounds. But when someone's grabbing the parrot's throat, you hear another sound coming. So the transcendental position Krishna describes is one who sees with equal mindedness happiness and distress, honor and dishonor. It's difficult to remain transcendental. You can't feign being transcendental. When honor comes, do not be forgetful. Or when dishonor comes, do not want to defend oneself. And you simply see the different factors, material factors. The overall training that Prabhupada recommends in response to your question more directly The overall training that Prabhupada presents is the whole process of devotional service, namely that which puts Krishna in the center of all activity. So that one, within one's mind, regardless of your activity, Krishna is in the center of that thought. With the other idea that we're the doer. That's material. That's false ego. And the soul's as soon as the soul identifies with matter, as soon as the soul comes in contact with matter, and there's some forgetfulness of Krishna, immediately then false ego is there. And one, then it being whatever endeavor that's being conducted according to one's false ego, according to your conception of who you are, then there's some sense, there's some idea, along with the whole package of the false ego, of who you are and therefore how you should enjoy. So you become the cause of the enjoyment, or the lack of the enjoyment. You did it wrong, you have to do it right. However, in transcendental consciousness, one still has to make some endeavor. There's one very nice way to depict the transcendental consciousness. I very vividly recall which I think it was on the day I was initiated, the day after I was initiated. Prabhupada gave a lecture. It was the day after. At the end of the lecture, normally Prabhupada didn't take questions, but in this particular case, there was a very boisterous devotee who didn't wait for Prabhupada to just dismiss everybody, so he stood up and started asking a question. And his question was, you find this written in the Lamrita. He asked Prabhupada how he wanted to distribute more and more and more of your books and your Back to Godhead magazines, and so we're flooding the whole world, and please just tell us how we can do that. Prabhupada paused and then said, distribute the books or do not distribute the books, that does not matter. But never lose the desire to distribute those books. So along with the desire, then you make some endeavor. There may be this way or that way or another way that you try to do it. And whether it's successful or not successful, that's up to Krishna. The only thing that we can maintain or claim to be our own is, or in control, is our own desire. And any endeavor, that's what we're doing. We're supplying the desire. Everything else Krishna supplies. He's supplying the ingredients. He's supplying the instruments with which you're making the endeavor, namely his body and senses. He's supplying the place. He's supplying himself as the sanctioner. So unless you're factually in transcendental consciousness, then you will be in this other category. Thinking yourself to be the doer. It's far better to be very plain and simple, honest about it, that I don't, how often does any one of us think that way consistently throughout the course of a sustained activity? And I'm simply a tiny soul moving around this vast ocean of matter, just desiring to serve Krishna. That's all that I consist of. That's all that I'm doing. And then Krishna supplied all these other things to fulfill that desire. He's given me a body with which I can then do this, that, and the other thing for him. However it comes out, that's completely out of my control. All I can do is just desire. But it's not desire, doesn't mean the inert kind of wishful thinking. daydream. But the body, the senses, they're supplied, so they use them in Krishna's service. Whereas in material consciousness, the same is the fact, but one doesn't acknowledge the fact. Krishna is also supplying the body for the materialist. He's supplying the objects of the senses with which they're trying to enjoy. And he's sanctioning their activities, giving some direction, some intelligence to their endeavor, which is part of their desire that initiates the endeavor, is the desire to forget God, kick them out of the picture. So the same set of things are going on for both, just it's a difference of consciousness. And that's what these two verses indicate. On the one hand, there's the one who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled. Though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So to be on a transcendental platform, you always have to see yourself as the representative of. The Lord informs Arjuna that the desire to not fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Super Soul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing does not kill, he is never affected by the reaction of such killing. Like an instrument that's used in someone's, like the instrument, the scalpel of the doctor, or the paintbrush of the artist. It's a whole different consciousness for oneself to think, I am the artist, as it is to think, I'm the paint and the paintbrush. And Krishna is the artist, and he's making the paint come out a certain way. Rishikesh came to save him. He's the master of the senses, and these are the senses. He's doing it. I'm just trying to cooperate. Trying to make my desire Krishna's desire. So there's some instruction. So we have a whole set of apparatus to work with. Prabhupada uses the expression, we try to make the best use of a bad bargain. It's a pretty clumsy set of machinery. And we can do sophisticated things with it, but compared to the spiritual form, it's a pretty clumsy set of apparatus. It's the old-fashioned model. All kinds of imperfections come out of this imperfect body. So given all of that, our service, then we can properly feel humble and not satisfied with the quality that comes out of his body, but nonetheless he uses Krishna's service. He uses his intelligence how to execute. The instruction is paint this nice painting for Krishna. Or whatever the instruction is. So then you have to see whole apparatus is just an instrument used by Krishna. Instruction is coming from Krishna, then the body is the apparatus to be used by Krishna. And the mind, that's another one of Krishna's energies, and the intelligence, that's also. And if the desire is to cooperate fully with Krishna's will, then the intelligence becomes its strongest and purest. And doesn't falter. And the mind then also becomes subservient to that intelligence. Now mind, think only of Krishna, think in this way, and use the brush this way and that way. Cut the vegetable this way and stir it now and put in the spice this way, and the mind then becomes instructed in relation to Krishna. So it starts from a more subtle position. And then everything else just lines up and follows. The question just comes back then to the basic concept of sadhana, the ABCs, the devotional practices, side by side with cultivation of understanding, philosophy, and then some practical execution. While performing practical execution of devotional service, you can then, or you should be then, drawing on that purified consciousness and the right theoretical application, then the practical execution, and they're all purified. So if one is simply very sincere and strives by right means, then you'll proceed towards the goal. It's far more valuable to see if you can experience that your consciousness factually is moving more and more gradually over time towards that goal, more so than some flash of experience of what it's like to not be completely immersed in false ego, and then just try to relive that moment. That can help one have the faith that the position of spiritual consciousness is for real. But far more convincing that Krishna consciousness is for real is progressively moved to the point of spiritual consciousness. And that doesn't come cheaply. As you get further realization, then what Prabhupada describes is by applying the process, by acting in right knowledge, one gains realization. And as that realization comes, that gives further impetus or increases one's faith to pursue further. And elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada describes that faith increases through association. Both, one needs the right kind of association and some sincerity to genuinely progress. So if you're given the knowledge, then you act on it. That's the test of sincerity. even difficulty or obstacle may be there. The sincere person doesn't throw in the towel or give up, or just keep, you keep wanting. The sincere person keeps trying despite the odds that are against them. Krishna's already given the odds. The odds are slim. Out of many thousands, you find maybe one who's making any endeavor. And those who have achieved perfection, those who have achieved understanding of the soul, are the one who knows Krishna. And Krishna can only be known through devotion. You really have to want to reach the ultimate goal. Not just, you know, not just the initial stage that begins everybody taking up some kind of spiritual quest. Mainly they're disturbed to pieces. They're unhappy like anything. Or they're under some economic distress, oppression. So they turn to God to help them. That may start the ball rolling, but that's not the most sincere of purposes. So ultimately the desire to reach the ultimate final goal of life, finish this material business once and for all, whatever it takes, then one can be situated in that proper consciousness while performing the activity or work, whatever it may be. And that's the price that one has to pay. This is what Rupa Goswami writes. If you go to a marketplace, actually being able to perform an activity according to what's being described here, that just by dint of your consciousness you're completely not bound up by your actions, that's not cheap. It's a high price. There are cheaper price tags for actions that actions in the mode of goodness or as it's described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, actions that one can just simply think oneself to be liberated. That type of consciousness is another category that's available. It's got a cheap price tag. You just have to think. Just think yourself liberated. Just get yourself all psyched up. Just think yourself liberated. And there are processes by which people can reach that. One has to really want the ultimate destination where all of that excessive mental activity is finished. One is simply seeing oneself as an eternal servant of God. What's the point, man?
It's the process to think of yourself in the talking about bodies process.
Yeah. Well, the information is there. I mean, the impersonal path is there. That is a realization. It is a legitimate stage to recognize that I'm spirit, part of God. But that realization is incomplete. And as the verse describes, where one is simply thinking oneself to be liberated, the rest of the verse describes that one doesn't have any good qualities at all. Whereas someone who is genuinely transcendentally situated becomes automatically decorated with all good qualities. What I'm saying very simply is to attain this kind of consciousness. I punched the clock, I punched in, punched out. How come the goods didn't come? What was the particular thing about the passage that you were reading from Bhagavatam, since we can't find it?
I think you answered the question.
Really?
With what you told Lakshmapriya. And with what it says here in verse, one who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled. In the text, Svayambhuva is retiring from his kingdom, and he's appointed his son, Priyavrata. Take over, and Priyavrata is wondering why should he take over. Not that I don't think he's worried that he'll become entangled again in material matter, in the material platform, but why should he even bother? And he's asked Narada why, and there's one picture that a devotee painted that shows Svayambhuva standing there, and Lord Brahma is coming down on a swan, and Priyavrata is there, and Narada is there, and a whole dialogue is about to take place. And
so the particular question that you had is answered here. How is it possible for someone who's transcendentally situated to become again active on the material plane? By that, under the order of the Lord, by the desire of the Lord. In other words, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm sure you're familiar with it, where Krishna describes that the transcendentalist is one who can, like the tortoise, extend their limbs or withdraw their limbs according to what is appropriate. When one's senses can be engaged properly in Krishna service, senses can be extended. And when there's not proper engagement in Krishna service, one's senses become then withdrawn. So the position that Maharaj Priyavrata was in, whether engaged in meditation within or engaged in direct activity, there's no difference in that position. Because both our position of devotion.
It's like not giving up your occupational duty, just carrying on in your devotional service.
Right. If that's what Krishna is desiring. However, if it's Krishna's desire the opposite, to do the opposite, then one is completely equipped and prepared to function in that way also. Prabhupada explained it in a very simple way like this, that if you're engaged in some authorized activity in Krishna's service, then you should consider that activity to be the most important thing. And also be prepared in the next moment, if called upon to engage in some other activity, the same consciousness accompanies that other activity. Not that one becomes attached, thinking, this is all in all, and I'm completely inflexible. I can't even conceive of if some authorized activity of some other variety comes. In other words, what Maharaj Priyavrata was doing, he was God conscious. And then when called upon to do something else, one can become completely absorbed and feel this is the most important thing also. And that's the position of transcendental life.
Oh.
Therefore, one can engage in all varieties of activities according to Krishna's direction. Because he's not in false ego. He's not thinking, I'm a meditator, yogi. About a week or so, or 2 weeks ago, there's this man that has been drifting in and out of the temple. He says, I'm a yogi. And if you sit and listen to him for a while, he'll tell you about all of his mystic powers and how he can fast for 60 days, no problem. So we were sitting down at the prasadam table, honoring prasadam. There's a plate of prasadam in front of him, and he was just sitting there listening to the conversation. We asked him why he wasn't taking prasadam. He said, well, because the Swamiji has not asked me to take, and I'm a yogi, so I'll just sit here and wait. But it's prasadam. Anyway, we didn't get into the devotional reality that it's Krishna prasadam. It's not what's the question of austerity? The austerity is to use your senses in Krishna service only. But he had a material idea of what is austerity. So he has some false ego. Based on his material conception of himself, he had material conception of God and that which is related to God also. Or, say it a little differently, until one comes to the position of recognizing that I am eternal servant of God, then one's in false ego, of some variety or another. But when one is free from that false ego, one can do anything. And not identify with that anything, but perform it on Krishna's behalf. Because my identity remains, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna is the master of my senses. He desires a particular service, so I use these senses in his service. He is the master of them. And if he calls for that activity to be stopped, then I stop. And if he calls for that activity to be something else, then I do that something else. And then the conclusion of the verse is, this isn't exactly your question, but anyway, the conclusion of the verse is, then one is free from the reactions. One's not bound up by karmic laws and everything else that accompanies that, all the emotions and so on. There's still emotion, for sure, but that emotion is the emotion of love, of all its, in all its variety in relation to God.
There's one word that keeps running out of my head, and that is surrender. No one has told what is a true devotee, has told Krishna consciousness, one surrenders.
And that's a progressive thing, just like love is a progressive thing. Love has its immature stage. You could describe that immature stage of love, that all the ultimate love of God that comes from devotional service to God, as Vaidhi Bhakti. Under the order one does, in a regulated manner. Why? Out of a sense of duty, because the injunction of the scripture is there, the order of the spiritual master is there, the direction of Krishna is there, therefore I do it. I don't have to do it, but I do it under the order. I have simply as a sense of duty, because duty is also love. That's the preliminary stage. When somebody starts getting all squirmish and squeamish about that one, simply because somebody says to do it, that's enough reason for some people to not do it. Because how dearly they hold on to their independence. I don't think I'm obliged to anybody. Or a false ego. I want to be supreme. And certainly I don't want to be subordinate to God. That's often not necessarily mentioned, this more rejection is often just principle. I don't want to be subordinate. Anyway, duty is a preliminary stage of love. Like duty to one's country, but duty to one's parents. Out of a sense of obligation.
Huh?
Yeah, duty is a form. It's a very beginning stage of service.
Even outside of
yes, but as long as it's in relation to God, then you can call it devotional service. Duties performed for God is a form of devotional service to God. Yes, even one is outside, inside, it doesn't matter.
But as long as a person that recognizes the love. Duty, love, God, doing the perfect in a perfect situation, you don't destroy. Call it love, right?
I think so. I'm not sure what you're saying.
Something like that. Anything you do in the duty of love of God, you will not destroy.
Right. It cannot be destroyed. That's right.
Perform the love of God.
That's right.
I mean, you know, God said, for things are all around yourself. That you, it's you, the love of God, means love without no pains.
Well, those no pains are there.
That, like when the child is born, and then in the born, the child is get pain when they cut it in the mouth.
Yeah, like it's pain, so not just the cutting, the whole process.
It's good. Not made it for love of God, it's made it for the love, pains of man in the moment. But something like that we decide all love in our life, you know, drive enough of that what he performed to us to do in the earth, me, for myself, decide love. So, something like that.
You can follow?
I think I'm understanding what you're saying, that if we do things for love for ourselves, it's not doing things for love for God. Different kind of love when we do things for our own satisfaction.
Yeah.
But when we do it for God, if that's a true love.
Like 80% of the world, they do it for themselves, love, woman and man.
Yeah,
and they're doing in a position blame. Like they're married and they're child and they know the world is contaminated. They're child born. Circumstances of contamination, sickness, whatever diseases, and I mean, it's not performance.
What the data say, what you just described is true for the transcendentalist also, or for one who is a lover of God also. However, the Vedas enjoin, the Vedic scripture says that one should not bring a child into the world unless one is capable of delivering that soul from any further birth. If you're capable, if you're powerful enough to take a soul to God, if you're that much connected with God, then you can have children. And if you can't, then you shouldn't have children.
I mean, you know.
You follow?
Yes. You do something that I don't destroy.
You behave yourself.
What?
You stop carrying on.
Am I on?
Yes. Just listen. Stop your giggling. Please. It's distracting.
you say so.
Thank you.
Like I was saying in the beginning, in the back, that we are making the love, but not for God, for ourselves. Like I give my love to a woman, and a woman give her love to me. No, something like that.
That's not love.
That's not love. That's
lust.
But we call it love.
Yeah, but we don't.
No, I know. We don't. Yeah, I know. I don't call it, you know. But I'm trying to explain to define myself. Something like that. Trying to know myself. And that I keep it loving my soul. And to give it to you. And to you tell me that, you know.
Love is meant for God. Other living beings are also in relation to God. So where that love is reposed exclusively, singularly, this is a definition given in Nectar Devotion. Love is that which is exclusively given to God. Other living beings may also be part of that relationship with God. And then it's alright. Then it's liberating. Otherwise it's entangling.
Can we call it too innocent love?
No, it's not innocent. It's in knowledge.
Like some people born and they don't know.
That's ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Some call it innocence. It's ignorance. Not knowing means ignorance.
It's like let's put it out in the material. So, child going to school, then from the school going to college,
Okay. So what's the point?
Something like I said, the point means that the child who was born and he went to school, he learned something or to know more than he, you know. I mean, he don't born and the world without no sense.
I hear what you're saying, but what's the point?
And the child who born, he don't go to school, he born and he don't have no sense. I mean, just
I see the two. I see what you're contrasting, so what's the point?
The point is like people, the 80% who are in the love, or like I said, blind love, or something like that, they have no sense.
They're an illusion.
I mean, yeah, they die and they don't even know, you know what I think. And people who say you, like me, or something like that, like anybody else, trying to give love or God, you know, and to learn from God, love, they die. And they die with the knowledge of God, and I think that spirit of love of God, they wake him up, and they went to him, something like that. It's like in university, he went to university, and then graduating, and then he, you know, took out a power, something like that.
And then what happens when he dies?
Hmm?
There, where does that power go when he dies?
No, I put an example.
I'm asking you a question. I understood your example. Now I'm asking you a question. My question is, what happens with that power?
What happens with the power?
When he dies.
That he left the power to other people?
No.
Yes.
No.
Another who come, you know.
What happens with the wave once it hits the shore? It recedes and goes back into the ocean. Doesn't it? The lifetime of that wave is now finished.
It's not finished.
Finished.
Oh, it's finished.
So same. Just using your example, I'm just taking the opportunity of hearing your nice example and making a philosophical point. That power that person accumulated by their study at the university is finished. They can't pass it on to someone else. They can't take it with them. They can't pass it on to someone else.
Knowledge.
You understand?
Yeah.
I'm just agreeing with you, but at the same time making a philosophical point, if that's all right.
I understand. This, I mean, the soul is something
I mean, look.
If you don't mind my interrupting, I just want to get back to his original question and make sure I'm satisfying his original question.
Yes.
Specifically referring to that power that person develops from that austerity study, that's gone. You can't just pass it on.
I'm understanding you're saying that there's certain knowledge that's passed on and people learn from it and use it, but the sense of power that one gets as a result, the sense of power that one experiences with that, it's gone.
Yep.
Well, they're gone.
Not only the sense of power, but that, in other words, phantasmagoria finishes, the show's over.
I'm happy. Very happy. It's amazing. No wonder. Oh, my goodness.
Must have really stuck it. Nope.
Wow. I just see a lot of different people experiencing all this power through the knowledge that has been passed on, but they really don't have anything, because when they go, that sense of power is not a...
That's what illusion means. They think they have something that's of substance, but there is no substance.
But the only thing for me is something I couldn't be to find the true life. It's only a sign of love for yourself.
Well, that's exactly the point that I'm making, is that outside of that which is directly taking what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that which is permanent, the wise say, here is truth or reality. And of those things that are impermanent, the wise declare, this is illusion. There is some appearance only of the real thing. I mean, just like this example that you're drawing. Spiritual, even just taking 1 plus 1 is 2, spiritual mathematics are different. What to speak of the application of those truths, material, axiomatic truths? The application is also illusory because the foundation is illusory. What is the one that they're adding to the one? The laws of material nature are there. That's a fact. And the material energy is moving according to those laws of nature. It's being conducted by those laws, or according to those laws. And the moving force behind it is the soul that's moving here and there in the field of the material energy, desiring like anything. According to those desires, then there are actions. According to actions, then there's karma, and the laws start unfolding, working. But the one plus the one, they're also illusory. The one is illusory, and the one that's being added to it is illusory. That's the point. Yes, you can say in some axiomatic way, or so there are some laws, and you can describe them, and that information can be passed along. But that whole show will also come to a close, ultimately. The curtains open, the drama unfolds, and the curtain closes. And everybody goes home. The actors and the
people.
So, someone may feel such a great sense of importance. There's an interview in science of self-realization, where a man is giving the argument that knowledge for the sake of knowledge. Prabhupada is saying no. That's not knowledge. And this man is obviously attached. I mean, it's an elderly PhD who's got his, you know, his money and his whole show based on that premise, that there's some value in just studying ad infinitum, whether it's useful or not, whether it brings the soul to liberation or not. Knowledge for the sake of knowledge. Prabhupada's saying no. So what to speak of passing it on? What's he passing on? He's passing on illusion. One can fall into illusion, one can be an illusion without the professor passing it on, more of it, in a sophisticated form of it. However, take that very same knowledge, put in front of a zero, one, that is actually one, then you have something, then you have ten. Or two zeros. I remember distinctly a lecture conference like this. In the material world, it's all a bunch of zeros. I would take these. It's all a bunch of zeros. But then it takes on value. You put a whole bunch of zeros and put a one in front of it, you really got something. So the reference that Prabhupada was making is this, just like he's giving the example, Prabhupada was saying academic knowledge. Many of the disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were vastly learned persons. But they came before Lord Chaitanya, submitting in all humility and truthfulness their foolishness, thinking of themselves as very learned persons, but actually recognizing, I mean, in the presence of Lord Chaitanya, recognizing they don't know anything at all. It's all a bunch of zeros. But when the one is put in front of all those zeros, then very great and wonderful things can come, and did come, from those associates of Chaitanya. Then the real value is to be revealed. But otherwise, it's not just a harsh condemnation. So that, you know, you can feel as indignant and self-righteous about your position. You say it's all a bunch of zeros. But where there's the absence of the eternal, just as this verse that we read, one who's most